Well, I've got a question for you tonight to begin my homily with. Have you ever felt that someone wasn't really listening or paying attention to you? You ever had that? You know, like they're looking straight at you and you're trying to say something, but they look distracted as if maybe they weren't all there. Maybe they seemed far away or not really making eye contact or appeared to be thinking about something else. Has that ever happened to you? Yeah, I see lots of nods. Happens to me every Sunday. Sometimes as I begin to preach, you know, I feel like our tech guy, Jim, up in the booth there is, you know, like playing a trick on me, like putting a slide up behind me that says intermission or something. But I know he would never do something like that because he's a good guy. But, you know, inevitably, whenever I begin my homily, you know, there's lots of distraction. That's the way it is, and it's okay. The way I figure it, people have been tuning out priests for the last 2,000 years, and they'll probably be doing it for 2,000 more. So, no big deal. But maybe you have felt this way in your life, like someone wasn't listening to you. You know, maybe your husband or your boyfriend is always glued to the television on Saturday morning, watching sports and not paying any attention to your honey-do list. Or maybe your wife is distracted by all the text messages rolling in from her friends on her phone. Or your teenager or grand teenager is consumed by social media at the dinner table. If you've ever had that feeling that you're being ignored, you're probably right. You're probably right. More likely than not, the people around you, while they probably want to listen to you, are actually pretty distracted. That's because every day, all day, we are bombarded by messages and demands and ever-present distractions. Every morning, we wake up to advertising, pop-up messages on our computer screens, push notifications from all the apps on our phones, news flashes about events that happen around the world don't directly relate to our lives but infuriate us anyway, calendar reminders, text messages from the salon wanting to confirm your next appointment, you name it. It's a distraction. Did you know that every smartphone now has a gyroscope in it, which means they can accurately measure how often people pick up their phones throughout the day? And do you know what the data shows? People check their smartphones on average every 12 minutes. 71% of people say they never turn their phone off, and 40% say they check their phone within 5 minutes of waking up. All of that is me. And I'm not hearing any gasps from you, so I suspect it might be the case with you too. And the thing is, many people, and maybe you feel this too, are reporting a steep decline in their ability to concentrate. Constant distractions are unhealthy. But not only that, they're addictive. Studies have shown that all those buzzes on our phones raise our adrenaline and cortisol and dopamine levels, creating an addiction to interruptions. And people in a recent study, get this, I was blown away by this. People who were repeatedly distracted by emails and phone calls had a 10-point drop in their IQ. That's scary, right? It's a problem of our time. And if you want to see how you're doing, go to the settings on your smartphone and click on screen time. If it's not already on, you'll need to turn it on and then check back in a few days. You might be surprised how many hours a day you're actually glued to your phone without even realizing it. But we want to help. We want to help. So today we're beginning a brand new 6-week message series called Focus. It's about how to overcome distractions so you can focus on what really matters. Take a look. This is a series about how to keep your eye on the ball and stay focused on the most important stuff in life, like your faith, your family, and the people around you who need help. Now, don't worry, we're not going to be criticizing you for being on your phones too much, despite what I just said. God knows I'm one of the worst culprits when it comes to that. We're not going to be offering quick fixes or easy life hacks to remove the distractions in your life, because as we're going to find out, the problem goes much deeper than that. No, this series is designed to help you live a life without regrets. Do you know what the most common regrets people on their deathbeds express? Number one, not living a life true to themselves. Number two, not staying in touch with friends. Number three, working too hard. What were they distracted by? All those shiny objects in their lives that stole their attention from what really mattered. Removing distractions and staying focused will allow you and me to come to the end of our lives and never look back with disappointment. Think about it. If you could anticipate the regret you might feel at the end of your life about certain aspects of your current lifestyle, wouldn't it change the way you live today? At least in some ways. And if you could actually feel now what you might feel in the future with the same clarity and intensity as in hindsight, wouldn't it affect the decisions you make now? Well, we think so. And that's why every week in this series, we're going to focus on a different common distraction that diffuses our attention and dilutes our concentration on the things that really matter. And we're going to figure out what we can do about it. Today, we begin with one of the most common and most difficult distractions of all. It's a diversion that affects almost everyone, and for some people, it's a huge problem. So much so that Jesus takes direct aim at it today in the gospel story. So let's take another look at that reading. Jesus is teaching the crowds, as he often does. And someone calls out to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." Jesus doesn't take the bait. He replied to him, "Friend, who appointed me as your judge and arbitrator?" Rather than getting embroiled in a family squabble, Jesus takes the opportunity to teach the crowd about the most dangerous distraction of all. Here's what he says: "Take care to guard against all greed, for though one may be rich, one's life does not consist in possessions." Now, notice how Jesus phrased that. What he's saying is that greed is the problem, not wealth per se. Greed, or the intense desire for money and possessions, is the problem. As the Bible says, the love of money is the root of all evil. Having money is not intrinsically evil, but loving money most definitely is. But before you all get too comfortable with that, here's the problem with that proverb. No one thinks they love money. Most of us assume that someone else needs to hear that message, not us. But the truth is that most people desire more money and they spend a good portion of their lives trying to get it. Although few of us here, at least, really need more money and possessions, the perception is that we do. I came across a study from Boston College that I think is hysterical. People with an average net worth of $78 million. Does anybody have a net worth here of $78 million or more? If so, I want to talk to you after Mass. But anyway, these people who had a net worth of $78 million felt that they needed 25% more wealth in order to feel comfortable. Right? Crazy, right? But that's true of ordinary people too. 79% said they believe they would be happier if they had more money. And it's the same with possessions, you know, the stuff we don't really need but think we do. I really should do like one of those jelly bean jars, you know, where you guess how many jelly beans are in the jar. I could make some money from that. But here, listen to this. The average American home contains, think of a number in your head, how many items? whatever number you're thinking of, it's not high enough. The average American home contains 300,000 items. Maybe you could go home today and count all those items in your house. I'm going to start in the rectory. Well, take a look at this shot of the luggage of a family. This is a friend of mine sent me. His family of five is going on a trip. And he wrote in the text, he goes, minimalism. I think he was being sarcastic, right? Now, granted, it was a long trip, but still, right? You see the point. Stuff just distracts us from our real purpose in life. It obscures our focus, and the constant desire for more causes significant stress. And we become preoccupied with acquiring more of it. In one study, 70% of Americans surveyed said their desire for money influences their daily decisions. The problem with that is that we become different people when we become obsessed with the color green. Now, you would think that a priest would not have this problem, but I do. For example, I recently invested a significant portion of my very small savings in a few stocks. It immediately tanked. And before I did that, I couldn't care less what the stock market was doing. Now, I'm obsessed with it. I check it compulsively, at least once a day, and often several times throughout the day. And that's the problem. That's the problem with the desire for more money. It disproportionately captures our attention and keeps us from focusing on more important concerns. As Jesus once said in Matthew chapter 6, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. Those who live their lives constantly desiring money and more stuff, which, if we're being honest, is most of us, we fall into a trap that leaves us mostly unfulfilled and often regretful in the end. As the author of Ecclesiastes in the first reading pointed out, all things are vanity. Why? Because, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can't take it with you, literally. And if you don't believe me, take a look at this famous sculpture about Jesus' teaching on getting into heaven through the narrow gate. All that extra baggage on that man's back just isn't going to make it through that small portal. That's the problem for eternal life. And the problem in this life with a relentless craving for money and possessions is that it shifts the focus to a place where it shouldn't be, on ourselves. Jesus tells the crowds a parable about a rich man who is preoccupied with building bigger barns to store all his grain so he can eat, drink, and be merry for years to come. And you see what God says to him. He calls him a fool. He calls him a fool because his life will end that very night. And then what will all of that have been worth? And then Jesus says, thus it will be for the one who stores up treasure for himself, but is not rich in what matters to God. The problem with the man's obsession with his material goods is not that he had so many of them. It's that he became self-absorbed. He concerned himself only with his own happiness. He put his trust in his wealth rather than God. He was too busy thinking about himself to think of God or even thank God for his good fortune or share his wealth with the poor. And when we focus on ourselves and how much we think we need, our greed becomes, as St. Paul says in the second reading, a form of idolatry. And we start thinking only of what is on earth instead of what is above. It shifts the focus away from what really matters, like helping the poor and fulfilling our God-given purpose in life. So what do we do? Well, the key to overcoming the constant allure of more money and possessions is contentment, knowing when enough is enough. And I don't know if it's just because I have a Swedish background, but I love this word that the Swedes came up for this, a word that they came up with for this. It's called logum. It was the it word a couple of years ago around the world. Everybody was saying it, logum, or enough. You see this picture? I love this picture, right? It's just enough, right? Just one flower, one cup of coffee, one notebook. It's enough. Enough. Look, there's two ways that you can get richer. One is you can make more money, or the other way is you can control your desires. Believe me, the second option is the better one for a life with fewer regrets. Now, of course, after a lifetime of always wanting more, it becomes really hard to curb our appetite, right? Because that's a learned behavior. Consumption is a learned behavior. But here's the good news. If you're struggling with this, if you're listening to my words and you're thinking to yourself, maybe I am a little too preoccupied with money and things, it can be unlearned. So, if you want to make progress on focusing on God, here's a couple of things that you can do this week to get started. Really practical things, just two things. Number one, get out a big piece of paper and make a list of the stuff you regularly buy, and also a list of the stuff that you've purchased in the last 6 months to a year. And then, once you have that list, put a check next to all the items that are necessities, you know, like food. And then put a big X next to everything else, the luxury items. Now, how many check marks you have and how many X's you have might just be a wake-up call in and of itself. It was for me. Take a look at my list here. I know it's hard to see here in the church, but this is a list of everything that I spent in 2021 on my American Express card. And the real problem categories for me, dining out. Dining out and travel. Those are the two biggest expenses. Those are the luxury items for me. Now, when you're finished with your list, consider putting a one-month ban on spending money on any single item on the luxury list. Just 1 month. You can do anything for a month. You could consider it a cleanse, you know, like a food cleanse. And then see how your bank account and your focus on the things that really matter both improve. Second thing you can do, take some time to declutter your home. Summer is the perfect time to do that. And you'll have a lot of extra time to do that once you stop spending money on all those luxury items. We're doing it here at the church. We're throwing things out right and left, and it feels great. But one piece of advice, I wouldn't do what that lady says. You know, she says, keep only those things that spark joy. I think that's the wrong question. Go through every room and keep only those things that promote purpose, your purpose. And then schedule a big pickup for everything else. When you stop spending, when you shift your focus away from making more money, and when you cleanse your home of non-essentials, it will free up your money, your time, and your energy like you wouldn't believe. But most importantly, you'll have lots of extra space and time and energy to pursue your true purpose in life, to love and serve others. And a lifetime of that is a life without regret.